You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Harmony of the Creative Word, the Human Being and the Elemental, Animal, Plant, and Mineral Kingdoms, formerly known as Man as Symphony of the Creative Word, Collected Works, Volume 230, Revised Translation by Matthew Barton. And this is Lecture 5, given on the 27th of October, 1923. It is the second lecture in the second part of the book, entitled The Interconnection of World Phenomena and the Essential Nature of the World. These lectures deal with the interconnections between natural phenomena and living reality in the world. And you have already seen that there are many things of which those whose vision is limited to the world of outward appearance have no idea. We have seen how every species of living being, this was shown by a number of examples, has its task in the whole nexus of cosmic existence. Now, today, as a kind of recapitulation, we will again consider what I said recently about the nature of several creatures, and in the first place of the butterfly. In my description of butterfly nature, as contrasted with that of the plants, we found that the butterfly is essentially a creature that belongs to the light insofar as it is modified by the forces of the outer planets, of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Hence, if we wish to understand the butterfly in its true nature, we must look up into the higher regions of the cosmos and must say to ourselves, quote, "These higher cosmic regions endow and bless the earth with the world of the butterflies," close quote. The bestowal of this blessing upon the earth has an even deeper significance. Let us recall how we had to say that the butterfly does not participate in anything directly connected with earthly existence, but only indirectly, insofar as the sun, with its power of warmth and light, is active in this earthly existence. Actually, a butterfly lays its eggs only where they do not become separated from sun activity, so that the butterfly does not entrust its eggs to the earth, but only to the sun. Then the caterpillar emerges. It is under the influence of Mars activity, though naturally the sun influence always remains. The chrysalis develops under the influence of Jupiter activity. From it emerges the butterfly, whose iridescent colors reflect in the Earth's environment the luminous sun power that the Earth can potentially evolve in conjunction with the power of Saturn. Thus, in the manifold colors of the butterfly world, we see the direct effect of Saturn activity in Earth existence and in the Earth's environment. But let us bear in mind that the substances necessary for Earth existence are in fact of two kinds. We have the purely material substances of the Earth, and we have the spiritual substances. And I told you that the remarkable thing about this is that in the case of man, the underlying substance of his metabolism and limbs is spiritual, whereas that of the head is physical. Moreover, in man's lower nature, spiritual substance is permeated with the activity of physical forces, with the action of gravity, with the action of the other earthly forces. In the head, earthly substance, conjured up into it by the whole of metabolism, circulation, nerve activity, and the like, is permeated by non-physical spiritual forces, which are reflected in our thinking, in our power of forming mental images. Thus, in the human head, we have spiritualized physical matter, and in the limbs and metabolism, we have unearthed, if I may coin a word, unearthed spiritual substantiality. Readers aside, unearthed is spelled E-N hyphen and then the word earthed. E-N earthed, unearthed, end of readers aside. Now, it is spiritualized matter that we find to the greatest degree in the butterfly. Because a butterfly always remains in the sphere of sun existence, it only takes to itself earthly matter. Naturally, I am still speaking figuratively, as though in the form of the finest dust. It also gets its nourishment from earthly substances that have been worked through by the sun. It unites with its own being only what is sun-imbued, and it takes from earthly substance only what is finest, and works on it until it is entirely spiritualized. When we look at a butterfly's wing, we actually have before us earthly matter in its most spiritualized form. Through the fact that the physical substance of the butterfly's wing is imbued with color, it is the most spiritualized of all earthly substances. The butterfly is the creature which lives entirely in spiritualized earth matter. And the spiritual eye, EYE, is able to perceive that in a certain way a butterfly despises the body which it carries between its colored wings, because its whole attention, its whole group soul being, is centered on joyous delight in the colors of its wings. And just as we marvel at its shimmering colors as we follow it, so also can we marvel at its own fluttering joy in these colors. This is something which it is of fundamental importance to cultivate in children, this joy in the spirituality fluttering about in the air, which is in fact fluttering joy, joy in the play of colors. The nuances of butterfly nature reflect all this in a wonderful way. And something else lies in the background as well. We were able to say of the bird, which we regarded as represented by the eagle, that at its death it can carry spiritualized earth substance into the spiritual world, and that thereby as a bird it has the task in cosmic existence of spiritualizing earthly matter, thus being able to accomplish what cannot be done by man. Human beings have earth matter in their heads that has also been spiritualized to some degree, but they cannot take this earthly matter into the world in which they live, between death and a new birth, for they would continually have to endure unspeakable, unbearable, devastating pain if they were to carry this spiritualized earth matter of the head into the spiritual world. The bird world, represented by the eagle, can do this, so that a connection is actually created between what is earthly and what is extra-earthly. Earthly matter is, as it were, gradually transformed into spirit, and bird creation has the task of giving over this spiritualized earthly matter to the universe. One can actually say that when the earth has reached the end of its existence, this earth matter will have been spiritualized, and that bird creation had its place in the whole economy of earthly existence for the purpose of taking this spiritualized earth matter back into spirit land. It is somewhat different with butterflies. The butterfly spiritualizes earthly matter to an even greater degree than the bird. The bird, after all, is much closer to the earth than the butterfly. I will explain this in detail later. Because the butterfly never actually leaves the region of the sun, it is in a position to spiritualize its matter to such a degree that it does not, like the bird, have to await its death, but even in life is continually restoring spiritualized matter to the environment of the earth, to the cosmic environment of the earth. Only think of the magnificence of all this in the whole cosmic economy. Picture the earth with the world of the butterflies fluttering around it in its infinite variety, continually sending out into world space the spiritualized earthly matter which this butterfly world yields up to the cosmos. Then with such knowledge we can contemplate the region of the butterfly world which encircles the earth with totally different feelings. We can look into this fluttering world and say, from you, O fluttering creatures, there streams out something even better than sunlight. You radiate spirit light into the cosmos. Our materialistic science pays but little heed to things of the spirit, and those who work with it therefore simply do not have the means of grasping these things, which are, nevertheless, part of the whole cosmic economy. They are there, just as the effects of physical activities are there. And they are even more real. For what thus streams out into spirit land will work on further when the earth has long passed away, whereas what is taught by the modern chemist and physicist will reach its end with the conclusion of the earth's existence. So that if some observer were to sit outside in the cosmos with a long period of time for observation, he would see something like a continual outstreaming into spirit land of matter which has become spiritualized, as the earth radiates its own being out into cosmic space. And he would see, like scintillating sparks that ever and again flash up into light, what the bird kingdom, what every bird after its death, sends forth as glittering light, streaming out into the universe in the form of rays, a shimmering of the spirit light of the butterflies, and a sparkling of the spirit light of the birds. Such things as these should also make us realize that when we look up to the rest of the starry world, we should not think that from there too there only streams down what is shown by the spectroscope, or rather what is conjured into the spectroscope by the fantasy of the scientist using it. What streams down to earth from other worlds of the stars is just as much the product of living beings as what streams out from the earth into world space is the product of living beings. People look at a star and with the modern physicist picture it as something in the nature of an inorganic flame that has been lit, or something like that. This, of course, is absolute nonsense. For what we behold there is entirely the product of something imbued with life, imbued with soul, imbued with spirit. And now let us pass inward from this girdle of butterflies, if I may call it so, which encircles the earth, and return to the kingdom of the birds. If we call to mind something which is already known to us, we must picture three regions adjoining each other. Parenthesis, there are other regions above these, and again other regions below them. Close parenthesis. We have the light ether, and we have the heat ether, which, however, actually consists of two parts, of two layers, the one being the layer of heat from the earth, the other that of cosmic heat, and these continually play one into the other. Thus we have not only one but two kinds of heat, the one which is of earthly tellurian origin, and the other of a kind which is of cosmic origin. These are always playing one into the other. Then bordering on the heat ether there is the air. Below this would come water and earth, and above would come chemical ether and life ether. The world of the butterflies belongs more particularly to the light ether. It is the light ether itself which is the means whereby the power of the light draws forth the caterpillar from the butterfly's egg. Essentially, it is the power of the light which draws the caterpillar forth. This is not the case with the bird kingdom. The birds lay their eggs. These must now be hatched out by warmth. The butterfly's egg is simply given over to what is of the nature of the sun. The bird's egg comes into the region of warmth. It is in the region of the heat ether that the bird has its being, for it actually overcomes what is purely of the air. The butterfly, too, flies in the air, but fundamentally it is entirely a creature of the light. And as the air is permeated with light, the butterfly chooses not air, but light existence within this light and air existence. To the butterfly, the air is only what sustains it, the waves, as it were, on which it floats. But the butterfly's real element is the light. The bird flies in the air, but its element is the warmth in the air, the various temperature differentiations. And to a certain degree it overcomes the air. Inwardly, too, the bird is to a high degree an air being. The bones of mammals and of human beings are filled with marrow. We shall speak later of why this is the case. The bones of a bird are hollow and are filled only with air. We consist, in so far as the content of our bones is concerned, of what is of the nature of marrow. A bird consists of air. And what is of the nature of marrow in us is simply air in the bird. If you take the lungs of a bird, you will find a whole quantity of sacs which project from the lungs. These are air sacs. When a bird inhales, it does not only breathe air into its lungs, but it breathes the air into these air sacs, and from there the air passes into the hollow bones. So that if one could remove the bird, from the bird, all its flesh and all its feathers, and also take away the bones, one would still have a creature composed of air, having the form of what inwardly fills out the lungs, and what inwardly fills out all the bones. Visualizing this purely as a form, you would actually get the form of a bird. Within the eagle of flesh and bone dwells an eagle of air. This is not only because within the eagle there is also an eagle of air, but the bird also breathes, and through its breathing it produces heat. This it imparts to the air in its body, pushing it into its entire limb system. Thus arises the difference in temperature as compared to its outer environment. The bird has its internal body temperature, as against the temperature in the surrounding atmosphere. In this difference of degree between the temperature of the outer air and the temperature which the bird imparts to its own air within itself, it is really in this that the bird lives and has its being. And if you could find a way of asking a bird how matters stand with its body, the bird's reply would make you realize, providing you understood bird language, that it regards its solid physical bones and other material adjuncts rather as you would regard luggage, as if you were loaded down with suitcases on the left and on the right, on your back and head. You would not call this luggage or body. In the same way, the bird, in speaking of itself, would only speak of the air to which it has given warmth as its body, and of everything else as the luggage which it carries about with it in earthly existence. The bones that envelop the real body of the bird are its luggage. We are therefore certainly able to say that fundamentally the bird lives only and entirely in the element of warmth, and the butterfly in the element of light. For the butterfly, everything of the nature of physical substance which it spiritualizes is, before it is spiritualized, not even personal luggage, but more like furniture. It is even more remote from its real being. When we thus ascend to the creatures of these regions, we come to something which cannot be judged in a physical way. If we do judge it physically, it is rather as if we were to draw a person with his hair grown into the bundle he is carrying on his head, suitcases grown together with his arms and his back, with whatever he is carrying on his back, such as a rucksack, making him appear a perfect hunchback. If one were to draw a person in this way, it would actually correspond to the materialist's view of the bird. That is not the bird. It is the bird's luggage. The bird really feels encumbered by having to drag its luggage about, for it would like best to pursue its way through the world free and unencumbered, as a creature of warm air. For the bird, all else is a burden. And the bird pays its dues to world existence by spiritualizing this burden for it, sending it out into spirit land when it dies, while the butterfly already pays these dues during its lifetime. You see, a bird breathes and makes use of the air in the way I told you. It is otherwise with the butterfly. The butterfly does not in any way breathe by means of an apparatus such as the so-called higher animals possess. They are simply more bulky and not really higher. The butterfly breathes, in fact, only through tubes which pass inward from the outside of its body. These are somewhat dilated, so that it can store air during flight, and is not inconvenienced by always having to breathe. The butterfly always breathes through tubes which pass into its interior. Because this is so, it can take up into its whole body, together with the air which it inhales, the light which is in the air. Here, too, a great difference is to be found. Let us represent this in a diagram. Picture to yourselves one of the higher animals, one with lungs. Into the lungs comes oxygen, and there it unites with the blood in its passage through the heart. In these more bulky animals, and also in man, the blood must flow into the heart and lungs in order to come in contact with oxygen. In the case of the butterfly, I must draw the diagram quite differently, in this way. If this is the butterfly, the tubes go in everywhere. They branch out inside. And the oxygen enters in everywhere and spreads itself out through the tubes. The air penetrates into the whole body. With us, and with the so-called higher animals, the air comes as far as the lungs as air only. In the case of the butterfly, the outer air is dispersed into the whole interior of the body with its content of light. The bird diffuses the air right into its hollow bones. The butterfly is not only a creature of light outwardly, but it diffuses the light, which is carried by the air, into every part of its entire body. So that inwardly, too, the butterfly is composed of light. Just as I could characterize the bird as warmed inner air, so in fact is the butterfly composed entirely of light. Its body also consists of light, and for the butterfly warmth is actually a burden, its luggage. It flutters about only and entirely in the light, and it is light only that it builds into its body. When we see butterflies fluttering in the air, we should really see them only as fluttering creatures of the light rejoicing in their play of colors. All else is garment, is luggage. We must gain an understanding for what the creatures in the environment of the earth really consist of, for outward appearance is deceptive. People today who have superficially learned this or that of Oriental wisdom speak of the world as Maya. But to say that the world is Maya really implies nothing. One must have insight into the details of why it is Maya. We understand Maya when we know that the real nature of the bird in no way accords with what is to be seen outwardly, but that it is a creature of warm air. The butterfly is not at all what it appears to be, but what is seen fluttering about is a creature of the light. A creature that essentially consists of joy in the play of colors. This arises on the butterfly's wings through earthly dust substance being imbued with the element of color, and thus entering the first stage of its spiritualization, on a passage out into the spiritual universe, into the spiritual cosmos. You see, we have here, as it were, two levels. The butterfly, the inhabitant of the light ether in the earth environment, and the bird, the inhabitant of the warmth ether in the earth environment. And now comes the third level. When we descend to the level of the air, we come to the creatures that actually could not have existed at a certain period of our earth evolution. For instance, at the time when the moon had not yet separated from the earth but was still within it. Here we come to creatures that are certainly also creatures of the air, for they live in the air, but are in fact already strongly influenced by gravity, which is peculiar to the earth. The butterfly is completely untouched by earth's gravity. It flutters joyfully in the light ether, and feels itself to be a creature of that ether. The bird overcomes gravity by imbuing the air within it with warmth, thereby becoming a creature of warm air. And warm air is upborne by cold air. It still overcomes Earth's gravity. The creatures that by reason of their origin must still live in the air, but are unable to overcome Earth's gravity, because they have not hollow bones, but bones filled with marrow, and also because they do not have air sacs like the birds, these creatures are the bats. Bats are a quite remarkable order of animal life. In no way do they overcome the gravity of Earth through what is inside their bodies. They do not, like the butterflies, possess the weightlessness of light, or like the bird, the lightness of warmth. They are subject to Earth's gravity, and they experience themselves in their flesh and bone. Hence that element of which the butterfly consists, which is its whole sphere of life, the element of light, is disagreeable to bats. They like the twilight. Bats have to make use of the air, but they like the air best when it is not the bearer of light. They yield themselves up to the twilight. They are veritable creatures of the twilight. And bats can only maintain themselves in the air because they possess their somewhat caricature-like bat wings, which are not wings at all in the true sense, but membranes stretched between their elongated fingers, a kind of parachute. By means of these, they maintain themselves in the air. They overcome gravity by opposing to it a counterweight that in itself is related to gravity. Through this, however, they are completely yoked into the domain of Earth forces. One could never construct the flight of a butterfly solely according to physical mechanical laws, nor could one do this for the flight of a bird. Things would never come out absolutely right. In their case, we must introduce something involving other laws of construction. But you can certainly construct the bat's flight according to earthly dynamics and mechanics. The bat does not like the light imbued air, but at the most only twilight air. And the bat also differs from the bird through the fact that the bird, when it looks about it, always has in view what is in the air. Even the vulture, when it steals a lamb, perceives it as though it were at the end of the air sphere. Looking down, it sees the lamb as if it were something painted onto the earth. And quite apart from this, it is no mere act of seeing. It is desire. What you would perceive if you took a proper look at the flight of the vulture directed toward the lamb is a veritable dynamic of intention, of volition, of desire. A butterfly sees everything that is on the earth as though in a mirror. To the butterfly, the earth is a mirror for what is in the cosmos. When you see a butterfly in the air, you have to realize that it ignores the earth, for it is just a mirror reflecting the cosmos. A bird does not see what belongs to the earth, but it sees what is in the air. The bat is the first of these creatures to perceive what it flies through or flies past. And because it does not like the light, it is unpleasantly affected by everything it sees. It could certainly be said that the butterfly and the bird see in a very spiritual way. The first creature, descending from above downward, that has to see in an earthly way. Let me read that again. The first creature, descending from above downward, that has to see in an earthly way, is disagreeably affected by this seeing. A bat dislikes seeing, and in consequence it has a kind of embodied anxiety, a fear of what it sees but does not want to see. And so it would like to flit past everything. It is obliged to see, yet is unwilling to do so. And thus it tries just to skirt past everything. And it is because it desires just to slip past everything that it is so wonderfully intent on listening. The bat is actually a creature which is continually listening to its own flight, lest this flight should be in any way endangered. Only look at the bat's ears. You can see from them that they are tuned to world fear. So they are, these bat's ears. They are quite remarkable structures, attuned to going softly through the world, attuned to world fear and anxiety. All this, you see, is only to be understood when the bat is studied in the context into which we have just placed it. Here, we must add something further. The butterfly continually imparts spiritualized matter to the cosmos. It is the darling of the Saturn influences. Now, call to mind how I described Saturn as the great bearer of the memory of our planetary system. The butterfly is closely connected with the capacity for memory in our planet. It is memory thoughts which live in the butterfly. The bird, this too I have already described, is entirely a head. And as it flies through the warmth-imbued air in world space, it is actually a thought in living flight. What we have within us as thoughts, and this also is connected with the warmth ether, is bird nature, eagle nature in us. The bird is the flying thought. But the bat is the flying dream, the flying dream picture of the cosmos. So we can say the earth is surrounded by fluttering butterflies. They are cosmic memory. By the kingdom of the birds, this is cosmic thinking. And by the bats, they are cosmic dream, cosmic dreaming. The flying dreams of the cosmos actually rush through space as bats. And as dreams love the twilight, so too does the cosmos love the twilight and send the bat through space. The enduring thoughts of memory, these we see embodied in the girdle of butterflies encircling the earth. Thoughts of the moment we see in the birds encircling the earth. And dreams in the environment of the earth fly about embodied as bats. And you will surely feel, if you enter deeply enough into their form, how much affinity there is between looking at a bat in this way and having a dream. One simply cannot look at a bat without the thought arising, I must be dreaming. That is really something which should not be there. Something which is as much outside the other creations of nature as dreams are outside ordinary physical reality. So we can say, the butterfly sends spiritualized substance into spirit land during its lifetime. The bird sends it out after its death. Now, what does the bat do? During its lifetime, the bat gives off spiritualized substance, especially that spiritualized substance which exists in the stretched membrane between its separate fingers. But it does not give this over to the cosmos. It sheds it into the atmosphere of the earth. Thereby, beads of spirit, so to say, are continually produced in the atmosphere. Thus we find the earth to be surrounded by the continual glimmer of outstreaming spirit matter from the butterflies, and sparkling into this what comes from the dying birds, but also radiating back toward the earth, we find peculiar forms enclosed in the air where the bats give off what they spiritualize. Those are the spiritual formations which are always to be observed when one sees a bat in flight. In fact, a bat always has a kind of tail behind it, like a comet. The bat gives off spirit matter, but instead of sending it outward, it thrusts it back into the physical substance of the earth. It thrusts it back into the air. And just as one sees with the physical eye physical bats fluttering about, one can also see these corresponding spirit formations which emanate from the bats rushing through the air. They rush through the spaces of the air. We know that air consists of oxygen, nitrogen, and other constituents, but this is not all. It also consists of the spirit emanations of bats. strange and paradoxical as it may sound, this dream order of the bats send little specters out into the air, which then unite into a single mass. In geology, the matter below the earth, which is a rock mass of a soft consistency like porridge, is called magma. We might also speak of a spirit magma in the air, which comes from the emanations of bats. In ancient times, when an instinctive clairvoyance prevailed, people were very susceptible to this spirit magma, just as today many people are susceptible to what is of a more material nature, for instance, bad smells. This might certainly be regarded as something more common and ordinary, whereas in the ancient, instinctive time of clairvoyance, people were susceptible to the bat residue which is present in the air. They protected themselves against this. And in many of the mysteries there were special formulas whereby people could inwardly shut themselves off, so that this bat residue might have no power over them. For as human beings, we do not only inhale oxygen and nitrogen with the air, we also inhale these bat residues. Modern people, however, are not interested in protecting themselves against these bat residues, for whereas in certain conditions they are highly sensitive, let us say to bad smells, they are highly insensitive to the bat residues. It can really be said that they swallow them down without feeling the least trace of repulsion. It is quite extraordinary that people who are otherwise quite fussy just swallow down what contains the stuff of which I have spoken. Nevertheless, this too enters into the human being. It does not enter into the physical or ether body, but it enters into the astral body. Yes, you see, we here find remarkable connections. Initiation science everywhere leads into the inner aspect of relationships. This bat residue is the most desirable food of what I have described in lectures here as the dragon. But this bat residue must first be breathed into the human being. The dragon finds his surest foothold in human nature when man allows his instincts to be imbued with these bat emanations. There they seethe. And the bat feeds on them and grows fat, in a spiritual sense, of course, gaining power over people, gaining power in the most manifold ways. This is something against which modern man must again protect himself. And the protection should come from what has been described here as the new form of Michael's fight with the dragon. The increase in inner strength which man gains when he takes up into himself the Michael impulse, as it has been described here in Dornach, this is his safeguard against the food that the dragon desires. This is his protection against the bat residue that is wrongfully in the atmosphere. If one has the will to penetrate into these inner cosmic connections, one must not shrink from facing the truths contained in them. For today, the generally accepted form of the search for truth does not in any way lead to anything real, but at most to something even less real than a dream, to Maya. Reality must of necessity be sought in the domain where all physical existence is regarded as interwoven with spiritual existence. We can only find our way to reality if we look at it the way it is now being done in these lectures. Everything good and everything evil is in some way or other connected with beings that are to be found somewhere. Everything is part of the great cosmic scheme of things, and its connection with other beings can be recognized. For the materialistically minded, butterflies flutter, birds fly, bats flit. But this can really be compared to what often happens with a not very artistic person who adorns the walls of his room with all manner of pictures which do not belong to each other, which have no inner connection. Thus, for the ordinary observer of nature, what flies through the world also has no inner connection, because he sees none. But everything in the cosmos has its own place, because from this place it has an inner relationship to the cosmos in its totality. be it butterfly, bird, or bat. Everything has its own meaning within the world order. As to those who today wish to scoff, let them scoff. Other things may be more worthy of ridicule. In the past, experts from renowned academic institutions declared that meteoric rocks could not exist because iron could not fall from heaven, and so on. Why then should people not also scoff at the functions of the bat about which I have spoken today? Such things, however, should not divert us from the task of imbuing our civilization with a knowledge of spiritual truths. The end of Lecture 5.